Coming up next on Tech News Today, Google might finally have a solution to its Android update problem. Delta warned its passengers about a laptop ban that hasn't officially been announced yet by the U.S. government. Cardiogram is using the Apple Watch to detect heart disease with a 97% accuracy. And Ian Thompson from The Register picks apart today's massive ransomware attack that hit hospitals and telecoms overseas. All that and more coming up next on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1767, recorded Friday, May 12th, 2017.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Grasshopper. Stay connected and run your business from your mobile phone with Grasshopper. To save $50 on your order, visit trygrasshopper.com/twit. Welcome to Tech News Today. This is a show where we help tell you what happened in technology. And a lot happened today. We're going to get to all of the crazy ransomware after the break, but I am Megan Maroney.
I'm Jason Howell. I have not been affected by ransomware yet. Have you?
In your whole life or today?
Actually, well, I don't know whether I have in my whole life or not, or maybe I'm just good at spotting it and not giving in, but I've certainly never had my stuff encrypted and then forced to pay 300 Bitcoin or $300.
I haven't been forced, but I did. I was working with someone who fell for like a ransomware scam or something like that with Dropbox. It was like their Dropbox had gotten encrypted. And I think maybe it was bad, but yeah. Not as bad as this, but we're not going to talk about that.
No. We're just going to talk about it and then talk about some other stuff like Android, a historical, if not laughable flaw in the world's most popular mobile OS. It's Google's Android has forever been how difficult it is to get OEMs to update their devices to keep them up to date, on a regular schedule even. Google is aiming to address the complexity of this problem with something called Project Treble. It's an upcoming feature to Android O, which is the next version of Android. It's currently in beta testing. Treble effectively creates two parts to Android devices. I'm going to try and simplify it a little bit here. One for the vendor to basically tie their customizations to, because vendors like to do that with their Android devices. And another one for Android's core operations, which would in theory allow Google to send system updates to the phone without interfering with the code or the time frame that the vendor is operating in order to manage their own updates to the hardware. This is something that I've been wanting for a very long time with Android, wondering if it's possible to take the Android model that we have now and the fact that vendors love to customize their devices and separate them, because like you're not going to get them to stop customizing their devices in an effort to keep things up to date. I just didn't know if architecturally underneath the hood it was easy to do without just completely rewriting Android from the ground up. Apparently they can do that, and apparently it's part of Android O.
Mm-hmm. We don't know exactly how it's going to work. Full documentation will be published with the launch of O, which is supposed to come soon, maybe at I.O. And so then we can say things like, here comes Treble, which I wanted to be the first to say that.
No, okay.
So I had to say it right away.
All right.
It's going to be less costly as well.
Well,
I think.
I mean, for the vendor side of thing, absolutely. Because they have to jump over so many hurdles in order to update, you know, the images. And that's why they don't end up doing it, right? Their customizations are intermixed with all the stuff that Google's doing. And meanwhile, Google's releasing these monthly security updates. So they have to set aside, you know, if you're an OEM like Samsung or, you know, LG or whatever, they've got a series of devices per year that they would then have to manage and update and take all of the customizations that are on each of those devices and test those against the new changes in either the security update or the major version update that Google puts out. And so, you know, it behooves Google to figure this out. That's certainly costly for the vendor. Mm-hmm. And it's costly for Google in the sense that there's always this huge kind of dark cloud over Android, which is no one's ever going to be on the latest version. I mean, here we are a year after Nougat, well, maybe not quite a year yet, but close, 9 months into Nougat, and I don't even think it's cracked 10% of all Android devices. Meanwhile, there are millions upon millions of devices in the world, so even 10% or less is a lot of devices, but that's not the majority of devices, and, you know, it's just, it pales in comparison when you take a look at something like a platform like iOS.
And so where does the carrier come in? Because when you say vendor, you mean like Samsung, the hardware maker. Mm-hmm. What about the carrier? Where do they fit in this?
That's a good question, and I have a feeling we're probably going to find out a little bit more about that once Google releases more details about this. So that's always been my understanding, is that it's also very difficult. You know, the carriers require a certain level of certification because it's their network. And so they need to be comfortable that the changes that Google or the OEM are making actually work in a way that doesn't hinder their network, doesn't abuse it, all this kind of stuff. So there's validation points all across the map that need to be satisfied. I'm hoping that what Google is doing here is making changes that respect that, but allow, you know, like maybe it removes one of those hurdles. Maybe it's Google has to communicate with the vendor, or even better, maybe the changes that Google's making on the OS doesn't even touch the vendor, or doesn't even touch the carrier. There we go. Mm-hmm. Better word. And you know, that's the goal, is that Google can deal with the stuff under the hood that affects the OS and makes it secure. I think at the heart of it, that's what people really want, a nice up-to-date secure device. Because security is everything in these days. We'll talk about that later. I guess it remains to be seen. But I'm super positive about this. I think Google's needed to do this for years now. Let's just see how it works. Because Google's infamous for rolling out these big, you know, these big ideas. And then, you know, I mean, this still, when you think about it, if it's Android O, a year from now, what is that? 5-10% of the devices could even benefit from this. Mm-hmm. So it's still going to take a while to actually permeate.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a catch-22 because mm-hmm. you have to get O in order to get the carrier, right. The faster carrier, the faster vendor updates.
So this is really good for 2 years from now, let's say.
Yes.
Great.
You had one job, Delta. Actually, Delta, you had a lot of jobs. First and foremost was keeping our planes in the air. Your job, however, is not to enforce the electronics ban on planes, which does not exist yet, but that is what you did. Delta had to apologize today for posting signs in the Cincinnati International Airport banning electronics larger than a cell phone as of today, May 12th, on planes. The airline said the sign was an error that was posted on Twitter, and it has been taken down. The 19-year-old so-called aviation expert, Alex Macheras, who posted the tweet, has continued to tweet about the electronics ban, claiming that his sources in Washington say that Europe and USA DHS are in a standoff because Europe doesn't want lithium battery devices in cargo holds. I mean, not that anyone asked me, but I don't want them in cargo holds either. According to Reuters, U.S. and European officials will discuss airline security issues at a meeting in Brussels next week. So, yeah, I mean, I feel like cell phones should just be banned, and airlines should ban them so that people can't record all the bad behavior that the sales, you know, people and the
so there's no limit to what they can
right,
do at
like,
that point. It's
banning,
like, we can't be caught for
yeah,
it, right?
We're banning cell phones so that you can't record us and tweet about the ridiculous things we do.
Megan, that's so 2018. That's next year.
Yes.
Okay, just give us some time to ease into that restriction because we know it's coming.
Mm-hmm. So the sign said May 12th. A lot of people had to screw up, in my opinion, to have that sign posted. Like someone
no
had
kidding,
to say,
right?
Go write that sign, go print that sign, go hang that sign. And, you know, some people were speculating that it's like, well, it was going to be May 12th because they were supposed to meet yesterday. And so they just wanted to be ready. And I get it. Like, there's the sign. I mean, you know, you want to be ready so that you have a sign so you can just, like, everyone working there can just say, like, look at the sign. Look at this. There's the sign. So they don't have to explain it to everyone. But, you know, it's a little ridiculous, as we've said. And, you know, as they've said, why do the lithium batteries in the cargo hold? That's scary.
Yeah. I mean, they're kind of playing, the U.S. Department of Homeland Security is kind of playing coy on this. They're saying no decision on expanding the ban yet, but it's under consideration. But like you said, like for it to get to the point to where Delta actually creates a sign with a specific date and puts it up, there's obviously the ball was dropped somewhere along the line, but there was some sort of official something happening behind the scenes. I highly doubt Delta was just like reading the newspaper and went, oh, look, there might be one, sources say, let's make a sign and put it up, you know, just to get ahead of the curve.
Mm-hmm.
So this is probably right around the corner. I'm wondering if you know, in the long run, I'm trying to find the positive arc in this story. Phablets will get a boost, right?
Mm.
Bigger phones?
Maybe, yes.
People might start saying, actually, I think I need a big phone now because it's about as you know, much of a multitasking environment as I'm going to get on some of these flights.
Well, there was a picture on Twitter that I saw someone holding their laptop up to their ear and just saying, like, this is my
Seriously,
phone.
I make this all my calls.
It. This is hello. I'm going to bring my Amazon Echo and say that is my phone.
Oh, because an Echo doesn't look like a bomb.
True.
Uber suffered a 1-2 punch yesterday in U.S. courts. First, Judge William Alsup ordered that Waymo's case against Uber that alleges the company stole its trade secrets be done in a public trial, basically denying Uber's bid to move it into private arbitration. So this is going to happen, you know, in a public scale. Things are going to kind of get ugly and everybody's going to see all of the, you know, hear all of the evidence. It won't be in private. Not only that, a judge referred the case to an examination to see if Uber did break the law, which points to a criminal investigation. We talked a little bit about this earlier, but this is more basically the first major decision in the case. Uber said that Waymo brought the case against the company and not Lewandowski, who's charged with stealing the secrets, to keep it public, like it was a manipulation of sorts on the case of Waymo. Judge Alsup argues, you know, wrote that those accusations are unwarranted. He said that it's a reasonable request and that Uber was just basically desperate to keep it out of court. So once again, not looking so hot for Uber.
No. And, you know, it's interesting, too. I mean, Google must feel great about this because, you know, they are in court cases pictured as the bad guy. And then this it's hard to find fault with what they're saying. I mean, we don't know all the evidence, of course. But basically, I mean, what they're saying is you can yes, you can run, but you can't hide. And yeah. I know we talk about Uber a lot and it's exhausting. Like I'm having Uber fatigue a little bit.
Yeah, I am, too. Being that this was a major decision in a pretty, I mean, of all the things that are happening with Uber right now, this has some major potential to undo the company on a number of different fronts, especially its long-term ambitions of being so tied into, you know, converting its fleet to autonomous driving. That's really when, you know, from a money perspective, from a revenue perspective, things pop because they can boot out the actual drivers and replace them with robot drivers and make all that extra money as a result. So, I mean, the long-term ramifications of a case like this, you know, it could force Uber to completely reevaluate how it's doing business in this realm and affect its bottom line significantly. So, you know, it's a pretty important case, being that it's the first major decision, and I'm sure it'll go from here. But I totally agree. Uber fatigue. It's because we went through like 2 months there where it was like every other day some big major bombshell about Uber was happening. It's
right.
All right, I get it. They suck.
I know. Well, I mean, I've also been following the ongoing story of how they were going to look at their toxic work culture and have a report written about that. And Kara Swisher's been doing some really excellent reporting on this. And, you know, she says the report was supposed to be out in May, and I think, you know, she has been in there like right on Travis Kalanick, and he was supposed to come to their big Recode conference, and, you know, he said he couldn't because he was going to be with his people dealing with this report, but then it became clear that the report wasn't going to actually be spread out to all the people at Uber, but he still hasn't come to the Code conference, so that's like inside baseball stuff. But
well, and they've removed Uber completely from Code as a result. It was going to be Huffington, right?
Ariana
Huffington.
Well, because she said she'd come, but she wouldn't talk about the report.
Right. And so they basically said, all right, no more Uber then.
Yeah. So check out Recode for all of that if you're interested.
Absolutely.
Health startup Cardiogram says that using their proprietary algorithm and the Apple Watch, you can help detect heart conditions, including a stroke. According to the company's early research results, these are very early research results, I should repeat that, they use artificial intelligence and the heart rate monitor on the Apple Watch, and they could possibly make a diagnosis that could be delivered directly to your doctor if you're in danger of having a stroke. The research was completed by Cardiogram, the makers of the heart rate monitor app, and the University of California, San Francisco. Right now, they need more testing with more people to back up the results, but it is a very, very interesting data so far. The Cardiogram app detects arterial fibrillation with 97% accuracy. That's compared to an electrocardiogram.
Wow.
And they wanted to detect AFib, the maker of this app says, that would otherwise not be diagnosed. So there are patches out there now that you can use to monitor, but the Apple Watch is something more people are wearing already, and those patches don't, they're not as long-term monitoring as, the Apple Watch.
Yeah, and it kind of gets to the point of if you're already wearing something and it's capable of detecting something like these, like heart disease or whatever, why not? I'm sure there's some regulatory hurdles that Apple would have to climb the further you go down that road of using the Apple Watch to help you diagnose things or at least to be an indicator of certain things. But they're not, obviously they're not, like you say, the only ones doing this. Alive Core is another accessory. Mm-hmm. And that makes watch cases that have built-in ECG monitors that can also detect heart palpitations. But this is just built into the watch. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's pretty awesome. They had 6,000 users of the Cardiogram app. In the study, 139 million heart rate measurements, 6,338 mobile electrocardiograms over the course of several months, and basically took that data and trained the neural network to recognize the difference between a healthy heart and atrial fibrillation. Mm-hmm. So very cool stuff.
And for those of you out there who have an Apple Watch and you use the Activity app and you like to get, challenges and rewards, there will be a Mother's Day challenge for you get a reward if you go on a walk or a run or a workout of a mile or more with a special achievement badge on the Activity app.
So the reward is a badge?
Yes, it's a badge. Okay. And you people out there who, you know who you are who enjoy the badges. It's not just me.
I would ask for a bottle of wine. But maybe that goes against the point. I don't know. Hey, I heard that wine is good for you. Yeah. Is that true? Is it true today?
I'm really surprised that Tim Cook didn't decide to give a bottle of wine to everyone who had an achievement on Apple.
Yeah, seriously.
Watch.
Is that too much to ask Apple? It probably is, actually. Amazon rolled out its own communication platform earlier this week with Alexa Skilling, but may have overlooked a pretty important feature in the process, contact blocking. As of now, if someone knows a person's phone number, that someone can make video calls, leave recorded voice messages, and send text messages to a recipient's Echo speaker. Amazon says a block feature will be arriving in the coming weeks, but I mean, right now, there's basically no way to keep those calls from hitting the speaker. If somebody has your number, whether you want them to be able to or not, like on your phone, on a smartphone, we can block a number. So we don't even see those calls. We don't even have to be bothered by the fact that they called and don't have to listen to their messages. Maybe we don't want to hear even the tone of their voice anymore. We're just that sick of them. Here, if they have your phone number, they can still get through to your speaker in your kitchen and talk to you. How does that make you feel, Megan?
It's a pretty big flaw, I think. Elise Oras wrote on Medium about this experience that she had. So what happened was that, she signed up. She was very, very excited about the Amazon calling. I wasn't that excited. I only signed up today just for research purposes because I was like, I don't know. I have so many ways to call. The iPhone never leaves my side. So she said she it wants to connect with your contacts, which, so many apps ask for that today. She said she expected it to go through and then you could select the contacts that you wanted to do. I don't know. Some apps do that, but I feel like I feel like you're turning over your contacts whenever you connect something to Facebook. So it didn't stop me. But then she has old landlords in there. She has ex-boyfriends in there. Like a lot of people that she just doesn't want connecting to her. And it's one of those instances that we see again and again where it's like, I didn't think of that. Like I've got no ex-boyfriends in my phone, and I'm imagining you don't either. So we don't think about those things. But then a lot of people do. And a lot of people, and even if you had like ex-girlfriends in there that you might not feel threatened by them. And it just means that once again, that there was no woman in the room there who would say, hey, maybe we don't want to do this because of this. And so, yeah, it's a good example. And, they were very unhelpful. I retweeted her tweet and, I haven't heard back from Amazon. I put feedback through on the Alexa app, on the Amazon Echo app to say, you should add this feature. The only thing you can do is turn on Do Not Disturb, which, blocks everyone, or delete the app. You don't get to use it if, at a time you had given your phone number to someone who wants to, be abusive to you.
If you decide that you want to disable this feature altogether, you actually have to call Amazon. You can't go into the app and just disable it entirely, from what I understand anyways.
You have to delete the Amazon Echo app.
From what I read, in order to actually kind of remove yourself from it entirely, not just do not disturb, but like you go through the process, it's really difficult to undo the process and go back to as if you had never launched it. You have to call them. There's no like toggle in the app to be like, remove me from it for good. Which is kind of an oversight as well. Maybe what Amazon was trying to do was remember what it was like in the olden days when we just had a landline and there was no phone call blocking.
Yes, it's true.
Yeah?
Giving them the benefit of the doubt there.
You just had a voicemail machine.
Yeah. And I don't mean to harp on it. Like, I don't want to make everything a feminist issue or an abuse of women issue. But this, to me, is the bigger issue of people in, I was going to say Silicon Valley, but these people are probably in Seattle. Although I don't know where the Amazon Echo team is, but people working on technology who think their experience is everyone's experience. And that's not true. And I wish that more, you know, people who are developing apps and all kinds of technology would understand that there's a whole world out there with people with all different kinds of experiences and think about them before they create a tool like this.
Yeah, because you have to imagine they were testing this a lot internally in order to get it to release. And if they're testing it internally, then they're testing with people that know about the feature and that they don't mind that they're calling them. They're not mm-hmm. testing it with people that they don't want calling them. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's all people that work at Amazon or it's their friend and family, and they're inviting people into their world. You know, I suppose then it could be potentially difficult to look outside of that bubble. Mm-hmm.
Quick reminder that you can comment on anything that we discuss on the show. You can email us at tnt@twit.tv. And, of course, subscribe to Tech News Today by going to our show page at twit.tv/TNT. After the break, Ian Thompson is here to talk about the ransomware attack that affected 74 countries today, at least in our last count. But first, let's take a minute to thank Grasshopper, the sponsor of this episode. Grasshopper is a virtual phone system designed for entrepreneurs. Grasshopper works just like a traditional phone system, but requires no hardware purchase. With their iOS or their Android app, callers can reach you wherever you are on your mobile phone. So you can be wherever and still work, still get calls. And Grasshopper allows you to keep your existing number so you can maintain your brand. So if you have like an 800 number or a number that spells out your business, you can keep that. You don't have to get rid of it by getting Grasshopper. They can use your number or you can create a new number. When you make a call, your client will see your Grasshopper caller ID. They won't see your personal phone number. So we were just talking about how you don't want some people to have your personal phone number because you never know when they're going to use it to be able to call to your Amazon Echo, which I, for one, keep in my bathroom. So I'm not sure I want everyone to be able to call me there. All you have to do is select a toll-free number or a local number, record a custom greeting, then you can add multiple extensions for your business. Toll-free numbers are great for marketing. They make your business sound more professional. You can set up department and employee extensions with custom call forwarding to any phone in the world. So if you have a lot of employees, this is great. They can all use this. Get voicemails emailed to you as audio attachments, and you can also send and receive SMS text messages from your business number. So join over the 250,000 Grasshopper customers today. Plans start at just $12 a month. And you have a 30-day money-back guarantee. So turn your smartphone into a business line with Grasshopper. To save $50 on your order, go to trygrasshopper.com/twit. That's trygrasshopper.com/twit. And we thank Grasshopper for their support. A new and especially virulent strain of ransomware is spreading across the globe, crippling the National Health Service hospitals in the UK and telecom companies in Spain. They're calling it WannaCry, WannaCrypt, WannaCryptor, WCry, and other names we couldn't keep track of. So we called in Ian Thompson from the Register to find out what's going on. Hi, Ian.
Hi, Megan. How's it going?
It's going good for me. At last count, there were tens of thousands of infections in more than 74 countries. As we are fond of saying here in earthquake country, is this the big one?
It's certainly the biggest one in recent memory, yes. Go all the way back to I Love You, I'm sure you got more infections there. But in terms of the effect it's had, it really has been quite devastating. Now, the majority of the infections have been in Russia, but so far 74 countries have reported infections due to this particularly bad malware strain. And yes, WannaCry, no patching, no cry. It's one of those things. But Unfortunately, yes, the British National Health Service has been has suffered some serious problems. Telefonica in Spain, FedEx here in the US. But as I say, the bulk of the infections in Russia, and at the moment it's spreading like wildfire because it's a particularly interesting form of hybrid malware. So you've got the basic ransomware package, which is, you know, what we're all well and used to. But then coupled into that appears to be worm-like capability, so that once it actually gets onto a machine, then infects all the available machines on the local network, all those machines that haven't been patched with the patch that Microsoft put out in March. And that particular patch was to deal with NSA exploits, which were released by the shadow brokers. And this malware uses both the NSA exploit to spread and also contains the double pulsar NSA backdoor software. So it's really quite a virulent package. What they've done is taken US government tools and used it to really beef up their malware in a very bad way.
So we've heard about the effect on hospitals, but you say most in the UK, but you say mostly it's in Russia where it's affected people, and the Russians Ministry for Internal Security. What's that?
Yeah, that was that. I mean, when this first came out, Twitter was just like, oh, it's the Russians striking back against the Western powers. It's like, no, the Russians got hit too. Apparently, we've seen some footage from the Russian Interior Ministry showing that they too have been hit. An awful lot of individual computers have been hit as well. And it does seem like the malware operators are sort of adapting this on the fly, as it were. Because initially, the ransom they were demanding was $300 per computer, payable in bitcoins, of course. And what we've now seen is that, according to Kaspersky, the actual ransom rate has gone up to $600. So they figure it's so widespread, it's causing so many problems, let's up the ransom and see if we can't get more money in. However, it doesn't appear they have got a lot of money in the first place. Looking at the Bitcoin blockchains that are there, it only seems like they've reaped in about $5,500, maybe $6,000 so far.
Why set it so low, especially when you're talking about this many targets in the world of ransomware? What is the psychology of, because we see this a lot. I feel like there oftentimes when there's a ransomware story, I end up reading what the amount was that they were demanding, and I'm like, oh, really? That's it? Like, this is a lot at stake for such a small amount. Why is that?
Well, the whole principle of ransomware is that it's going to be more difficult for companies to actually get their funds back rather than actually just pay up the ransom. So they generally try and keep the ransom levels fairly low. $300, you know, I mean, if it's a choice between wiping your system and reinstalling from backups, then it's probably easier if you just pay the $300. If they up it to $600, then, you know, I think that's a reflection of the fact that this is spread much wider than first thought.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still, you know, it's a relatively small amount of cash because they're working on the principle that people will think it's an awful lot easier just to pay up the ransom at the end of the day rather than really, you know, go through all the hassle of getting your backups, making sure they're up to date, reinstalling the machine afterwards. So what they're trying to do is work on a sort of, you know, it's an inconvenience rather than a crippling disorder.
Got it.
It's like the reason why I buy a bunch of stuff at the dollar store that I don't need, or at Target, because I don't need to buy it, but it's cheap, so might as well.
The barrier is lower, so you might as well.
Yeah. Well, we were discussing this in the office, and we thought, actually, you know, given the widespread nature of it, they could probably afford to drop the price and have more people paying. But
right.
It doesn't seem they've got the fundamentals of market economics going on this one.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Well, that's why a lot of people will just, like, hit your credit card, you know, for $2 or $3, but they're doing it so widely that you don't notice. I mean, this is a little bit different because they're obviously noticing.
They're noticed. It's been noticed.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's been noticed. So, yeah.
Ruined a lot of people's weekends. But yes.
Yeah. So patient data has not been compromised as far as we know. That's what I read. But I mean, what are hospitals telling people? I heard they're telling them just don't come.
Yeah. I mean, the Prime Minister, British Prime Minister Theresa May put out a statement saying patient records haven't been compromised, but they have been encrypted and are unable to get hold of. So whether or not they've been compromised is kind of, you know, immaterial to the end result. Some hospitals are saying, unless it's a real emergency, don't come in. Some operations have been cancelled because patients' notes can't be taken down. It doesn't appear at this stage as though anyone suffered physical harm because of this. Although if your operation's delayed and it's a major operation, you conk out before the next appointment is made, then that could be a serious issue. But yes, patient data, it's not a malware aimed at stealing patient data and sending it into a command and control server. It's just encrypted it so that the doctors can't actually get hold of it. So if you've got a really serious emergency, the lights still operate, there's still surgeons there, it's perfectly possible to do these things. It's just getting up-to-the-minute patient data. And the NHS does have paper backups for most of its records. So that's not as crushing as an issue as it could be. To be honest, the problems with the National Health Service, why it's got hit as badly as it has, is for the last 5 or 6 years, the government has been progressively starving it of funds as a precursor to privatization. And so a lot of their systems are still running on Windows XP. Now, they arranged a special deal with Microsoft to carry on supporting XP, but it was incredibly expensive. So it was cancelled in 2015 as a cost-saving measure. And a lot of machines still haven't been upgraded because doctors would prefer to spend the money on saving lives rather than updating their IT systems.
So then, all right, so their eyes are open now to what happens when you let your operating system go horribly out of date like that, especially when it's tied to things that are as life-threatening as taking down the operations at a hospital, let alone a bunch of hospitals. What is the next step? Is it for all of these places to upgrade their systems? Is it for them to strike a better deal with Microsoft and get those updates happening again? I mean, no matter how you slice it, it's incredibly expensive to protect themselves, but they need to do that, right?
They do. Let's not blow this out of proportion. This is one day taken out of, the last, in the case of the National Health Service, the last 70 years of patient care. Something like this hasn't happened before. And I would agree with you utterly that this should be a major kick up the backside for the British government to start funding the NHS properly so they can afford to upgrade their systems. Now, Microsoft have actually been pretty good about this. They put out a malware patch, within hours of this starting to spread. As we said, there has been a patch to stop the initial incursion vulnerability out since March. But it's just a question of, we're seeing a lot of companies, not just the National Health Service, being hit by this. I mean, Telefonica, who you would think would be pretty IT savvy, have reportedly lost 85% of their computers to this thing. Now, if a telco can't update their computer systems, I think there's a large pool of people out there who, unless they patched up properly, are still going to be vulnerable to this.
So we're not talking about, government agencies or anyone, the hackers. There's no confirmation that if you pay the ransom that they will turn over your information. Sure. So what are security experts advising companies and hospitals? Pay it or don't pay it?
Well, this is the age-old question when it comes to ransomware. I mean, the official advice from certainly the US government and the UK government is do not pay the ransom. But as we've seen with past infections, where police departments in America have been infected by this, they've decided to pay up, which just encourages the ransomware people to actually sort of go out and attack people again. I mean, honestly, if you are infected by this, I would say hold off, because it appears, with these kinds of ransomware, occasionally, security companies can crack the encryption. We've seen this with ransomware in the past, and there's no need to pay up, and you can still get the keys to unlock your data. The absolutely key, two absolutely key things that people have got to do. First off, stop clicking on attachments from people you don't know. It's security 101. And I'm sick of having to write stories like this because people are, that looks interesting. I'll click on that, and boom, that's it. They're pwned. Now, the other thing is basically make sure you're fully patched and fully up to date and most importantly, fully backed up. Because if you're backed up, ransomware has no effect. All you need to do is wipe your system and reinstall from your backups. Now, I know we don't all back up to the level that we should. But at the same time, if it's a choice between paying these scumbags or actually just losing maybe a couple of days' data, I'd go with the second choice. Because if you pay them, it's only going to encourage them to do this more and more and more.
Well, Ian, it's always a pleasure to talk to you.
It's even always so delightful and cheery.
You somehow managed to make even the worst security hacks delightful. And yet, like you said, we shouldn't overblow it. Like when they use words like cripple and, those kinds of things, we do have the tendency to just really scare everyone.
Who doesn't? But it's one of those things. But it's bad. It's not as bad as it could be, but it's still pretty bad. I mean, this is we were discussing this in the office earlier on today, and in terms of the effect that it's had and the eyeballs that it's got and the kind of, and the way it's got people talking, this is one of the biggest malware incidents that we've had in recent years. And it's ransomware, so it's particularly destructive. But we are going to see a lot more of this because ransomware is incredibly popular with the online criminal community because it solves one of the major problems, which is getting hold of the money. You know, if you're doing phishing scams and man-in-the-middle attacks, you've still got to hire money mules to shift the money, and they take their percentage, and they tend to get caught an awful lot. With ransomware, boom, you get it on someone's system, they send you some money, end of story. The one thing I would say, though, is perhaps the malware writers have possibly overreached themselves, because not only have they gone up against the Russian government, but they've gone up against, as I say, 74 different countries. So if they are looking to get asylum, you know, to go to a country with no extradition treaty, they're going to have to be really, really careful because there's an awful lot of people really peeved at them at the moment.
Well, Elon Musk is looking for people to go to Mars, so maybe that's where they'll have to go.
Oh, I'd cheerfully send them there. I'd just leave the spacesuits behind.
Ian, thank you so much for coming on. Ian can be found at theregister.co.uk, where he's following this story, following the executive order on cybersecurity and the electronics ban debate, which will continue. And following other security stories as well. And he is at Ian Thompson on Twitter. Thanks so much.
Always a pleasure. Have a great weekend.
Take care, Ian. We'll see you later.
Cheers.
All right, feedback time. A few weeks ago, we discussed neural networks and machine learning and artificial intelligence. Three different terms there, all very similar. We pondered whether they are the same thing. We got this email from a software developer named Anthony in response. It was a little long. We had to cut it down, but I think we got to the core of it. He writes, I've studied artificial intelligence at the university level, and I'm currently doing some R&D related to AI solutions for law enforcement, public safety agencies across North America. From an academic perspective, there is a difference between these three terms. Artificial intelligence is a large field of computer science that relates to any system where an artificial agent interacts with some environment in order to achieve a specific goal. Artificial intelligence has many subfields within itself, including machine learning, intelligent game playing, natural language processing, and more. These fields can overlap a bit, but individually, they're not synonymous with artificial intelligence. They're just different applications of AI. A neural network, on the other hand, is a specific computational model that can be used to implement a machine learning algorithm. There are many other models that one could use to create a machine learning algorithm, such as a Bayesian classifier or a decision tree. Neural networks just happen to be extremely versatile and outperform other models in many cases. Thanks for sending that in. That actually makes a whole lot of sense when you spell it out like that. But it becomes difficult sometimes in the flow of conversation to remember which component of you know this whole area of technology represents the thing you're talking about, because they do get interchanged quite often.
And I love when experts email us who are watching, so please do tnt@twit.tv and tell us, because I do think this is going to be the future. This is the field it's involved in everything, and the more we know about it, the more, you know, we can tell what's someone just throwing out, like, oh, it uses artificial intelligence to measure the amount of alcohol you need to pour in a drink, or if it's something that we really didn't know about. TNT's fan of the day is at Bucky Wootmaster, who sent us this video of him working in his workshop. Bucky said, I have most of y'all's podcasts keeping me current all day in the cabinet shop. Here's some stuff I do.
He's working really fast. I don't know if he drank a lot of coffee this morning, but he's moving really fast. I've never seen a woodworker work this fast.
Yeah, really, really fast.
Holy cow.
It's amazing. We should talk a little faster for him.
Yeah, like, I know. He must build cabinets in like 5 minutes.
Yeah, he probably listens to us at higher speeds.
Five times the speed.
Yeah. Use the hashtag HowIWatchTNT and post on all the social medias or email it to us at tnt@twit.tv. We will find it. We love to see what you do while you watch or listen.
Yes, thank you for sending that in. Finally, here's a quick one. HP responded to Thursday's news that some of its laptops were inadvertently keylogging everything thanks to a Conexant audio driver. We spoke about that yesterday. HP says it's releasing a fix for 2016 models of its affected laptops today, and 2015 models will get a fix tomorrow, they say. HP also clarified that the debugging feature that actually swept up those keystrokes was meant for development only. It was never intended to be present in the publicly released hardware, so it was supposed to be removed. It wasn't. Oops. But at least, you know, they're doing a quick fix on this and turning it around. So if you have one of those affected laptops, expect a fix to happen very soon. Mm-hmm. And all of the things that you type won't be logged, at least not as far as you know, until the next discovery happens.
Oops, I did it again.
Oops, I swept up your keystrokes. I'm logging you into your account. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 2300 UTC at twit.tv/live. Be part of the show by emailing us, tnt@twit.tv. You can leave us a short voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW, and find us on Twitter at Tech News Today TV.
If you want Jason to sing Britney Spears in technology stories every day, please share that information with us on our subreddit at technewstoday.reddit.com. Share any story that you think can be written in a Britney Spears lyrics, Britney Spears lyrics. You know what I'm talking about. Do it. You can find the way to subscribe to our show, all the ways, at twit.tv/TNT. And if you want to tweet at me, if you're not on Reddit and you want to tweet at me your favorite Britney Spears song that is about technology, I'm at Megan Maroney.
Tweet me, baby, one more time. I'm at Jason Howell on Twitter. Oh, sorry, I'm really sorry about that.
Thanks. Are you sorry?
Just a little bit. But I'm also very happy about it, too. Thanks to our technical director, Kara, for making me feel like I'm way funnier than I actually am. Thanks to Mario for helping out in the studio. Thanks to Kevin for editing the show. And thanks to you for talking tech with us today. Have a great weekend. We'll see you on Monday. Bye, everybody.